everybody. Welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Greyer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight, our guest is Crimson Diggs.
Hi!
Crimson is a non-binary polyamorous queer person who works at a local LGBTQIA plus community center, Positive Images. They are also a math major at Santa Rosa JC, an indie game enthusiast, and a lover of cats.
Welcome, Crimson.
All right, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
We're excited to have you.
We're excited to have a youngster with us for a while. We haven't had a youngster in a while, right? Yeah. So, yes.
Yeah. Well, we really look forward to speaking with you, Crimson, in more detail, learning about you, having our listeners learn about you, which is so exciting. But first, here's news and events with Outbeat member and our engineer, Greg Moralia.
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio news for the week of August 3rd, 2025. In London, England, over 100,000 people marched at an event last week, making it the biggest transgender pride march in the world. The event's theme, Existence and Resistance, was developed in response to recent UK Supreme Court rulings that the legal definition of a woman in non-discrimination law is based on biological sex rather than gender identity. Lewis Burton, the event's co-founder, told The Guardian, quote, "It was an emotional and powerful day at a time when the UK Supreme Court is making sweeping decisions about transgender people without consulting a single transgender person, and when a small, well-founded lobby of anti-transgender campaigners continues to dominate headlines and waste public resources, our community came together to show what real strength, solidarity, and care looks like." The march took place for just 2 miles near the BBC Broadcasting House at the Parliament Garden Square. The event's speakers included Heartstopper actress Yasmin Finney and activist Carolyn Littman, whose transgender daughter took her own life back in 2022, after waiting nearly 3 years for gender-affirming health care. And here in the U.S., anti-LGBTQ plus legislation doesn't seem to be slowing down in 2025. In fact, it's gaining traction. 21 states so far have passed 67 different laws. 598 bills restricting the rights of queer people have been proposed in state legislatures across the United States so far this year. Most of the laws target specifically transgender people's access to public facilities and gender-affirming care, as well as general recognition in society. And one of the states with very active legislators is the state of Ohio, where numerous anti-LGBTQ plus bills have been introduced just this legislative session, including one that would out LGBTQ plus students to their parents if they receive any related counseling. A bill requiring transgender politicians to list their dead names on public records, and a law restricting transgender students' ability to use preferred names and pronouns in schools. There's even a ban on drag, even though the federal courts have blocked a similar law for violating free speech rights. State Democrats have also introduced legislation to enshrine LGBTQ plus non-discrimination protections, as well as a ban on so-called conversion therapy into law. But none of the bills have even received a hearing. The Ohio legislature is currently on summer break and will reconvene this fall. One of the bills they will consider then is Ohio House Bill 190, which would require parents to submit school permission slips for educators to address students by different names or pronouns that differ from the names and gender listed on their birth certificate. Republicans nationwide have tried to claim that affirming students' trans and non-binary identities without parental disclosure is a form of indoctrination and, quote, transing, end quote, kids. Last week, we reported that Kaiser Permanente here in California announced that it's going to suspend gender-affirming surgeries for anyone under the age of 19. But Boston's Children's Hospital has reaffirmed its commitment to providing gender-affirming care for transgender youth and says it won't give up or give in to bullying by the current federal administration. In a statement, the hospital said, quote, Boston's Children's Hospital has always been and always will be committed to providing the best care for all of our patients, regardless of their gender identity. And it goes on to say, quote, the belief that all children deserve the opportunity to live, grow, and thrive with love and support is foundational to who we are and what we do, end quote. And finally, in the state of Kansas, the University of Kansas and Kansas State University announced that they're ending LGBTQ+ and diversity, equity, and inclusion programs due to a new state law. A provision in the latest state budget, Senate Bill 125, directs all state agencies, including colleges and universities, to end any programs or activities related to DEI. It also bars state employees from using gender-identifying pronouns or anything related to gender ideology in email signatures. It doesn't define DEI or gender ideology, and it takes up just a few lines of the 300-page bill, but the universities are implementing it in their own way anyway. Kansas State announced last week that its LGBTQ+ student center, the Spectrum Center, will close by the end of July. In a campus-wide letter, Thomas Lane, Dean of Students and Vice President for Academic Success and Student Affairs, praised the center's work and said support for LGBTQ+ students will continue despite the closure. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
So if you just joined us, we are talking with Crimson Diggs. Crimson, we really want to thank you for giving us a little time from your very, very busy schedule.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to chat with y'all.
I just want to briefly say how I met Crimson. I was at the Sebastopol Flea Market and just walking around looking at all the goods, and I saw this person who I just went up to. You had a just glow about you. Yeah. And so I just wanted to introduce myself, and I just did it. And I say, would you like to be on our radio show?
Yeah. I was kind of like, oh, sure. Why not? That sounds fun.
Wow. Diana's so friendly.
Yeah.
I mean, what'd you think when she just walked up to you and said, want to be on our radio show?
I was just like, whoa, that's kind of cool. Just like come up to a stranger and be like, hey, I was like, how'd you know that I was LGBT? Oh, it's probably because I was wearing the shirt that says Sonoma County Queer on it. That'd probably give it away.
Yeah. And you were tall, too.
Oh, yeah.
I like tall people because I'm tall, right?
I'm 5'9".
Yeah. You are?
I think you had on some shoes. I think you had some big shoes on, no?
Oh, did I? I might have. I do like to wear like tall platforms.
Yeah, you seem like you're closer to my height. Yeah.
Okay. How tall are you?
6 feet.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Oh,
wow.
Maybe. I'm like, was I wearing my big shoes that day? I can't remember.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, anyways, it was a nice meeting.
I agree very much.
Well, yeah. So we'd like to ask you about your work, your hobbies, your passions. Just go ahead and give us a little bit of who Crimson is.
Yeah, for sure. Well, like y'all said in the introduction, I work at Positive Images. I feel very passionate about like being able to serve my community and like create a safe space for them. I do a lot of work in the youth groups there, like organizing the youth groups and like running our youth leadership team. So it's just like really, really awesome to be able to like create an environment for young queer folks to like make friends and get some support, especially since, you know, a lot of them maybe have harder home lives and like less supportive families. It's like just feels really good to be able to be like a supportive figure to them and provide them with a safe space. So I just love my job so much.
How long have you been there?
I've been there 3 years now, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, 3 years. 3 years I've been working there, but I started attending as just a participant of their adult groups before that. So they're very good.
As a participant, before you became staff, what did the group mean to you in your life?
Well, I had just moved from out of state into Sonoma County. So, you know, living in a new city, I was really struggling to make friends. I wasn't in school at that point. And I was just like, oh God, how do you make friends as an adult? So it was just like such a wonderful place for me to just like feel welcome and like get connected to community, you know?
I think that's a really great strategy for anyone who moves to a new city, is to find people that you know will accept you and love you. And it's for any kind of group, really. And I think that's just such a wonderful way. How'd you find out about positive images when you moved here?
So a friend of my grandma's actually used to work there. And so I was kind of like, kind of trying to like look around. Like I also went to LGBTQIA plus connections a couple of times. And then yeah, my grandma's friend Sharona was saying like, yeah, you should check out Positive Images. And I was like, okay, like I was kind of nervous. Hadn't been there before. I didn't really know what to expect. But then I just walked in, kind of like, hi, I'm new here. And both the staff members who were there at the time just greeted me so warmly and gave me a little tour of their center. And I also, I'm sure we'll talk more about like coming out stuff later, but like that was also when I changed my name and like just started to be able to introduce myself to people as Crimson. And so I come in and I'm like, hi, I'm Crimson. And both of the staff people there are just like, whoa, that's such a cool name. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like it's just such a special memory for me, the first day I walked in just to be greeted so warmly. Yeah, so great. I loved it. Yeah, very important to me.
Totally embraced, huh? Yeah. You mentioned a name, and I'm just curious about that name, Sharona.
Oh yeah, Sharona is she's my great aunt's partner.
Oh, okay. Okay. I
Yeah.
thought it was somebody we knew, so.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. She gets around. Yeah. But that's not the only thing that I do for work either. I'm now a student also, like you said, at the JC, and I've gotten really into math tutoring over there. And that's kind of another space where I've gotten to kind of take the skills that I've learned at Positive Images and implement them in a different way. Like I've worked as a teaching assistant for a few semesters. And part of that is I get to like have like office hours. But I kind of treat it more as a study group. Like I have like a whole classroom that I get to have, and I tell the students, just come hang out and do your homework. No pressure to ask me a question if you don't have any. But if you do, like I'll be right there to help you. And it's just really cool to be able to like kind of use the skills that I've learned from leading the leadership, like the youth group stuff, and be like, yeah, now I get to create a space that's like totally my own. Yeah, and I really love to like meet students where they're at. There's a lot of people who maybe have some gaps in their math knowledge, maybe didn't, maybe they took algebra like years and years ago, or maybe they didn't at all. And so, if you're struggling with like knowing how negative numbers work, like that's okay. I'm not gonna judge you for that. So I really, really love to be able to create just like a totally safe space where I'm like, yeah, I'll meet you where we're at, like where you're at, like we're all good.
That's beautiful. You've always been a math mind type person.
Yeah, I was homeschooled for a lot of my life. So like I was in public school for like second through fourth grade, and like in that point I was pretty good at math, but it didn't really like click to me that I was like a math person at that point. But then I started going to the JC, and I was a sociology major at the time, but I took a statistics class to check off the math box, and then I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is what I need to do actually. I need to work with numbers."
Oh, that's amazing. So we're like everybody that I know, Diana and myself included, is like statistics. Oh Sticks.
my gosh, how am I going to make it through this class?
Yeah, that's the response I hear most of
And here
the
you are, it's like, oh my gosh, this is so great. Oh.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, this is like life-changing for me. Oh my God, I love this.
So you are a teacher at Santa Rosa, or are you just a student?
I'm a student, but I'm a teacher's assistant. Yeah, I go in one of the classes with a teacher who I really love. Shout out if anyone's listening and needs a good math teacher. Sandy Nieto is the best. I love her.
How did you work your way into being a teacher's aide versus simply a student?
Well, honestly, like even after I took that first statistics class, the teacher afterwards was like, "Hey, I'm looking for a teacher's assistant. Are you interested?" And at the time, I was like, "Actually, no." Because it was in Petaluma, and I was like, I don't want to go that far, actually. But then that happened again when I took pre-calculus with Sandy the next semester, and I was like, hell yeah, let's do it. So, and then I've just been working with her.
They saw something in you.
Yeah.
They saw something clearly.
Yeah.
Like, do you get perfect scores on your tests like that?
Maybe not perfect, but pretty good. And like, I'm usually like answering a lot of the questions that come up in class and like helping out my classmates. And they could kind of see that I'm like, it just clicks in my brain. I just have a math brain.
So open to helping others too.
Yeah. I feel so rewarded. Like, it's so rewarding to me to like help someone out with what they're struggling with. I'm like, yay, I want everyone to succeed.
So 3 years being here, you seem like you just got your feet and fingers all into good, what do you want to call it? Nooks and crannies.
Yeah, I really feel like I've become really enmeshed in the local community in a lot of different ways. And it's just like, man, it's so cool. I love it.
I want to go back and ask you something about positive images as far as your own personal experience there as a participant and as a leader. Yeah, just anything else you want to just add about positive images in your experience, and then we can move on.
I think just, like, especially in a political climate that feels so oppressive to LGBT people, like really, really strongly right now, it just feels really impactful to be able to like fight against that directly by like providing direct support to the people who are impacted by that kind of stuff. There's a lot of bad in the world for our community, so I'm just feel so grateful that I get to fight against it and like be like, no, this is our community. We're gonna stick together. Like, we're gonna hold space for each other and we're gonna stay strong. And I'm just so happy that I get to be a part of that.
I'm curious about it. Like, how many kids are you serving or adults? And because of the political climate, do you feel like there's less or more than before?
That's a good question. I'm like, I don't think I've noticed a huge change on like how many people are coming, but it's definitely like, I've heard from some people that it's just like really hard to exist in the world, and like I can just hear like in their shares that it's a very needed space, Yeah, and I'm like, as far as how many we serve, like usually we have up to like 16 kids at our youth group and probably a similar number, maybe a little more of adults at our groups, but it kind of changes by the week. Some days we have a whole room full of kids, and then other days we have like a handful. So,
Yeah, that's
like,
exactly where I was headed. So you both minds, incredible minds, are right on the right track where I'm thinking, yeah, because I want the political climate. I want to see the, what the change was, you know.
yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, so you got the support at Positive Images and you're doing your teaching. Any fun things, any connections outside of that?
I mean, as far as just like fun things that I enjoy, like hobbies, I really love video games. Really big on like independently created games. Like, my favorite kinds of games are games that are just made by like one person, like just kind of threw it all together as like a passion project.
How do you find the games that you're attracted to? Like one person did it and you really like that. They're indie games. Like, how do you find that
She's a
genre?
researcher. Oh, my pronouns are they, them, by the way.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. Yeah, my bad.
All good. Mostly just like stuff on the internet. Like, sometimes I'll see somebody playing a particular game on YouTube and I'll be like, oh, that's cool. Or like TikTok will be like, hey, check out this game. And I'm like, that sounds right up my alley.
Oh, I see. I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I really love games that tell an emotional story. Like, I love games that are going to make me cry.
Well,
Yeah.
like, could you have example that I could go, the listeners and I, we can go see, like, the games that you love?
Yeah, for sure. My most recent game I've been really into is a game called In Stars and Time. It's very, very LGBT, tons of queer characters, which is really cool. But it's about this character who's like, it very much plays off of like traditional like RPG tropes. Like, you've got a whole party of characters and they're at the end of their adventure and they're about to go like go fight the big boss, and it's like, whoa, we're gonna save the world. And then they go do that, and then the main character dies. And then he goes back in time and wakes up again at the start of the game. And it's like, hey, what happened? And like at first, like the first section of the game is very like lighthearted and fun. Like, okay, we're gonna like go try again and we're gonna do right this time, you know? But then the loops just keep on repeating and repeating. And you kind of go through this emotional turmoil with the character. And like, I had to take a break from it for a while because I was just like, oh God. But like you really get to like experience that challenging stuff along with him and also like learn more about your other the other party members and stuff, and it's a very emotional game and I love it so much.
In Stars and Time.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for asking. I love talking about that
Well, it shows. It shows. Wonderful. So you are into video games and you're into school and homework.
Unfortunately.
So what do you see yourself doing with your math once you graduate? Are you going on to graduate school or?
Yes, I'm actually planning to transfer to UC Davis next year. So it's gonna be a little sad to leave Sonoma County. I've gone back and forth about it a lot of times, but I think that's gonna be the best for me to get some new life experiences and see what's next for me over there. You know, I mentioned I started out as a sociology major and then I was like, oops, no, I need to do math, but I still really want to work in sociology. So I'm hoping that after I graduate from Davis, I will work in sociological research. 'Cause like, you know, like the core of what I want to achieve in my life is just to like help people. It's like the world is so awful and I want it to be better. So I think that research is a good way, a good start to that, you know. I felt very lost for a long time on like how I could actually like use my life to create something good. And, you know, that's kind of just been a loose goal of mine is like, I'll figure it out when I get there. Like, yeah, but like that just feels like something that can lead to like powerful social change. And like, I kind of think on the way, I've kind of done that anyways, you know, with my work at Positive Images and my math tutoring stuff, you know?
Yeah, I see you clearly as a people person.
Yay.
Yeah, but research, isn't that kind of isolating?
I guess I don't have a super clear image of my mind on what that might look like, but I'm thinking about, you know, like the stats that people quote to like implement policy changes, you know, like saying, oh, like this percentage of people feel isolated from their community, therefore we need to like create more spaces for their community. I actually got to work on something like that at Positive Images. We did a queer needs assessment that came out a few months ago, I think. So like that was actually like super cool to get a little taste of like what I want to do on a bigger scale. And we got to say, you know, I can't think of any exact quotes to say off the top of my head, but being like, hey, like, you know, this percentage of people have a poor access to community, you know, and stuff like that. And so it's like, yeah, these are the numbers that back up the reasons that we need more community spaces or more housing support. You know, that's a really big one that came up a lot too. It was like housing, safety, community, like I said, and there's one more and I can't remember it, but there is another one.
Yeah, I remember that because I was questioned, interviewed for one of those. Ariel, I think,
Oh, really?
three. Yeah, for black community members, LGBTQ.
Oh, okay. You know what? I'm trying to think. I'm like, I might have actually worked on some of that data. Yeah. So that's cool. So you know about that then. That's great.
Cool. Right on. Yeah, it was good. It was nice talking to another young person.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Just to talk and learn about what you all are doing now
Yeah, for
and
sure.
how you're supporting the community. So that was good.
Yeah, well,
Yeah.
thank you for being a part of that too, you know? It's really important to get like a lot of as many like different voices as we can because we're, you know, really wanting to try to represent a lot of different people, like especially those who are like historically underrepresented. So
So I want to jump into, because I know you corrected me by, your pronouns, which is really important. And, I just want to talk to you about how you're dealing with that misgendering, whatever you want to call it, in the public, in your relationships, in your family. Because, we're in the older generations, right? Because we're going to make these mistakes sometimes, and we try and be sensitive to it. And I just really want to respect and acknowledge how kind you were, just to be clear about who you are and what you want and what you prefer. Exactly. That's great. And how you delivered it. Some people, I'm hearing conversations all the time about people really getting upset, non-binary people really getting angry and upset about being misgendered or, not being called them, they, or whatever they decide on. How are you seeing that or noticing that in your own life or in your family connections or with older generations?
Yeah, for sure. Just like out in the world in public, like I've kind of just accepted, like, I look a certain way, I'm just going to get misgendered. And sometimes it's not worth, like, if I'm interacting with a fast food person and they're taking my order, I'm not going to have the whole conversation with someone who I'm never going to talk to again, right? But yeah, as far as like more personal relationships, what's really important to me is that people are trying. I'm really close with my grandma and she really, really wants to support me in my gender identity, and she messes up sometimes too, and I'm just like, hey, you're doing better than my mom. That's always what I say. Like, at least you're trying, That's really what matters to me, is like the effort and the intention is there. Like, I'm kind of used to being misgendered. It doesn't bother me too much. I know that's not the case for every trans or non-binary person, but there are definitely some people in my life who kind of don't get it and don't really make an effort to get it. And like, that is what hurts, is when that effort isn't there. It's just like, I don't see you for who you are, and I'm not going to try to learn about who you are. And that's definitely a struggle for me. But I'm really grateful that a lot of my family is trying really hard to like incorporate that gender neutral language into their vocabulary. That's what matters to me, is that they're trying, and some of them are pretty good at it. So it can be challenging sometimes.
You have siblings?
I do have siblings. I have one sister and then I have several stepsisters.
Local?
No, my sister, she's actually just about to move to New Jersey because she's going to school to be an opera singer. So,
wow.
Yeah, my family's kind of spread out all over the place. Like, stepsisters on one side, I never really talked to all that much. And then stepsisters on the other side live in Georgia right now because my stepmom's going to school out there. And then, like, my mom lives in Isleton. She lives on a boat, fun fact. My family's kind of crazy, or kind of all over the place, rather. Yeah, and I have a lot of family in Sacramento, too. Like, I'm really close to my aunt and my cousins and uncle out there in Sacramento. Like, I FaceTime them every week. And, they've definitely been, like, some of my biggest support people in a lot of ways in my life. So, very grateful for them.
Your family sounds wonderful, and we really would like to delve more deeply into your coming out and your family acceptance and a lot of those issues that come up for all of us. Mm-hmm. But it is time for our music break. And we'd like you to introduce the song that you brought and why it means something to you. Why did you decide on this song?
Sure. Yeah. So the song that I brought is called Malibu Pier by The Living Tombstone. This is an artist that I've loved throughout my entire, like, well, not entire childhood, but a lot of my, like, teenage years and stuff. They started out making, like, Five Nights at Freddy's music, which is another indie game that I really like. And, like, I've kind of just been listening to their music as I've grown up. And their more recent stuff has taken a little bit more of, like, a political turn. This song's called Malibu Pier because it's kind of like, it's the idea is like, in the hopefully pretty distant future, but who knows, when global warming gets worse, it's like, oh no, instead of Malibu Beach, it is now flooded and it's Malibu Pier. And it's kind of a criticism on like, just like how we got there and all that stuff. But it also has like a really like upbeat feel. I actually have a playlist that's like songs that are like about like, oh God, the world is horrible, but like we're dancing and having a good time. So it very much captures that vibe, and it's also really catchy and gets stuck in my head a lot.
Well, thank you so much for bringing it. And I'm sure a lot of people will be listening to this for the first time. So we appreciate you bringing the song. So everybody take a listen to Malibu Pier by The Living Tombstone. And we will see you on the other side.
Sunrise, an empty mansion at the seaside. No one around, a little town committed suicide. The people drown amid the high tide. The beach is wet with money. Blank check, it's not enough to buy the time back. It's not enough to stop the world and try to fight back. The ocean carried off the wine rack. It's kind of funny. Living at the end. Upon a chaise longue, the water took the city. Sea salt, the markets came to a complete halt. They tried to warn us, we ignored them, it's our own fault. The ocean's filling up the bank vaults. It's kind of pretty.
And welcome back. In case you're just joining us, you are listening to Malibu Pier by The Living Tombstone, and we are talking with Crimson Diggs, extraordinaire. So Crimson, we were wondering, how was it for you to come out to yourself, to your family, in life? How was that? Can you take us through the process?
Yeah, sure. So I kind of started to question my sexuality when I was around like 13, 14, you know, like kind of growing up very much like on YouTube and stuff. Like I kind of had this idea that like, oh yeah, I'm a girl, I'm supposed to like boys. And so I do. I kind of felt like I was pretending a little bit and like trying to convince myself. I had a crush on a YouTuber called Markiplier, who I kind of think was my like, maybe, I don't know, maybe a little bit of a denial crush, but also, I don't know.
You're young and finding yourself, so go ahead.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I kind of got to a point where I was just like, I didn't really have much of like an awakening. It kind of was just like a gradual process where I was kind of just like, like maybe I do like girls, you know. I wasn't really exposed. I definitely was not exposed to a lot of like queer stuff growing up. I didn't even know that my own grandma was queer. I was a lesbian until I was 13. And I'm like, dang, I wish I knew that earlier. That would have saved me a little bit of that shame, you know, in like finding out, you know. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to like the experience of like searching on YouTube, like, how do I know if I'm a lesbian? And then being like, oh God, no one can ever know that I searched this.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But then I got to a point where when I was around like 14, when I was like, okay, I think I might be bisexual, you know. And so I kind of like, I kind of half started coming out. I remember the first time I talked to somebody about it, surprisingly in retrospect, was with my mom and my stepdad. We were just kind of having one of those like deep conversations, and I was kind of like, I don't know, I might be bisexual, and they were like, okay. Then it was kind of like that conversation never happened fast forward like a year when I like had a girlfriend that I like met online and like did not tell a whole lot of people about, and my mom made a comment that was like, oh, if either of you or your sister bring home a girl, like, then we're gonna have a problem. And I was like, oh, okay.
So with that comment from your mom, so what did you do?
I kind of just doubled down on the idea that I was like, okay, I'm not gonna tell her. at least for that time being, you know, definitely like kept it on the DL, like, but you know, obviously that changed eventually. Or at some point I was identifying as bisexual, and then at some point it just kind of got hard to like picture myself like being in a relationship with a man. So I was like, okay, I guess I'm a lesbian. And I don't really remember like kind of what prompted me to like, well, I don't know. I got to a point where I was like, okay, I think I'm ready to come out to my family, right? And I don't know, again, why I thought this was a good idea for how I was going to handle it with my mom. But for context, my grandma was teaching me how to drive. And so she and I would like spend a lot of time driving together. And she would always make this joke, like when giving me directions, that instead of saying to go straight, she would say to go gaily forward, because we were both gay. And I was like, that's how I'm going to come out to my mom. Yeah, so we're in the car, you know, I'm 16, I'm driving, and I make that joke to her, and I'm like, yeah, like, this is what grandma would always say, because we're both gay. And she was like, you're gay? And it was just awkward. So it was really hard for her to accept that for a long time. But, you know, by the time I was, like, 18, I had, a girlfriend who wasn't a long distance. Well, I mean, she was, but, you know, close enough to drive to each other and, you know, introduce her. But, you know, it was still kind of hard. Like, because, you know, when my sister would have a new boyfriend, she would always ask her, like, how they met and all this stuff. And, like, she did not have that same level of interest when I had my first, like, real girlfriend. But, you know, she kind of very slowly made her way into, like, accepting that, at least that part of me. There's more to come. But so like we got there. That's kind of the sexuality coming out story, and then the gender coming out story, and then also kind of change on how I identify now, because now I actually do have a boyfriend. But we are T for T, so he's trans and I'm also, you know, non-binary. So because I've at some point I realized that my sexuality is I like women and really pretty boys. Yeah, so kind of moving on with my story, you know, COVID happened. I went to live with my dad for a while in Alabama because my stepmom was out there for medical school. And once COVID started happening, you know, she called us, me and my sister, and we're like, oh God, we're really worried about you. Like, hospitals are really full. And like, if you get sick, she's like, I know how to take care of you. And so we were kind of like, okay, and just kind of left our whole lives behind, or at least I did. My sister ended up moving back pretty soon, but I stayed out there for a year and a half. And during that time, I got to kind of explore my gender identity. A little bit before then, I did start asking my friend group to use they, them pronouns for me, just to kind of like try it out. And I was kind of like, ooh, this is kind of cool. But yeah, I had a really supportive group of queer people in my friend group. So, you know, one day I was kind of like, hey, I kind of figured out that like non-binary was a good label for me. Definitely was using that like with my friend group. And I was kind of like, a lot of non-binary people have really cool names. And my name at the time, I didn't really vibe with that much. So I found like on TikTok, there was like a list of like non-binary name ideas. And I made a list of the ones that I liked. And Crimson was the one I wanted to try out first. And I was like, yeah, this is great. So I kind of got lucky with the first one. But, you know, I didn't really come out to my dad or anybody at that point either. But
is that your legal name now or no?
No, it's not. I still have, you know, my dead name on a lot of like medical stuff and whatnot. But kind of like misgendering, like it doesn't super get to me. It's kind of just like, okay, I'm not going to go through the trouble of explaining to this random health professional, you know, that I use a different name. So I was living in Alabama, didn't really come out to my family there until after I left. But then, you know, I moved to Sonoma County and I lived with my grandma. Kind of long story about how that all happened too, but that's just kind of where I ended up. And, you know, like I was saying earlier, right, that really gave me a good opportunity to like introduce myself to people as Crimson and like really figured out that, like, yeah, that's the name for me. Like, this is who I am. Came out to my grandma. She was super supportive, which was really great.
When you say you came out to your grandma, do you mean you came out as Crimson to your grandma?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I had come out to her as gay long before then. I don't even remember when. So eventually kind of came the time when I was like, oh gosh, I ain't gotta tell my mom. We were going out of town for my birthday. We went up to Lake Tahoe. I was like so nervous about it, like so built myself up about it. Also, for more context, my mom and stepdad are Trump supporters. So so that's who we're dealing with. So my stepdad and I had this whole like long conversation about like gender and kind of the nuances of it, and I was kind of like, hey, it feels like we're actually getting somewhere. And then we got to a certain point and it was like, oh, maybe not. But then eventually I worked myself up and I told them, like, I am non-binary and I use they them pronouns and I'm going by Crimson now. And I was so nervous and they were kind of just like, okay. And I was like, that's it? What do you mean?
What's coming?
Right, exactly. I was like, that feels like it went a little too well. Then, I realized that they were not going to call me by the name that I wanted to be called by or the pronouns. And they were kind of just like, that's just, I don't know, my own thing that they were not going to deal with. And so ever since then, it's been pretty hard. And I've really tried to get through to them a few times and it just hasn't really clicked, I think. Definitely have had some conflict with my mom about it a little bit. So that's kind of hard. And, at some point, it was kind of another hard conversation once I had two partners, my current partner and then my previous partner at the time. And I was telling my mom, I was just like, oh yeah, like these are, I have two partners now. Like I was like, I've already done the whole coming out thing. I'm not gonna make a big deal out of this one. I'm just gonna do it, right? And she was kind of just like, what? Like, she did not get it.
Mom, I could just imagine your mom. I just can imagine her when you're telling her all this, like, about yourself. I could see her expression.
Yeah.
I can't.
She was very like, what?
Exactly.
So, and she also like was very confused about one of my partners being a trans man, was like asking questions that were not appropriate for either of them. One of my partners was a trans man, the other one is non-binary, and she was just being so weird about it and still kind of just like doesn't quite, I don't know, it feels like how it was all over again, like when I first had a girlfriend, and she's just kind of like just being weird about it, but not like overtly hostile, like it's just a time. But yeah, definitely grateful that I have a lot of other people in my life who have like wholeheartedly embraced my partners. I'm only with one of them now, but like he's totally like part of my family, at least on my dad's side, like with my grandma and my aunt and cousins and uncle who I mentioned earlier. Like, they've just totally accepted him as part of the family. And I'm like, this is so cool. I really wish it was the same way on my mom's side.
So how does one become polyamorous?
It definitely requires a lot of really clear communication and honest communication and emotional maturity, Like you really have to realize that, like, your partner loving somebody else does not diminish the love that they feel for you. So it really, you really gotta check in and be honest and say, like, if you're feeling jealous, name that too. Just really, really super honest, super clear. And just a lot of emotional maturity, I think.
Yeah, I asked that question because as a psychotherapist, I have talked with many people, and we have friends who have been in polyamorous relationships, and communication is really key. But jealousy, they realize that they couldn't do it. And I mean, you're young, and these people are older that I've been working with. And that's why I was curious about how do you manage that. But it seemed like you have to be mature, you have to have good communication skills, and you have to name the jealousy if that's what it is and be able to talk about it. But anyways, yeah, I just wanted to just pick your brain about that and see how Young people are dealing with it, you know what I mean?
No, I appreciate that. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of misconceptions about polyamory, and people will kind of just like assume that it's like you just want to justify cheating or whatever like that. But like, you know, my current partner and I all the time talk about like how cool it is that like he can be my wingman if I want to go find a girlfriend, you know, like or like, you know, if he has a crush on somebody else, I'll be like, "Oh my god, that person texted you back," you know, like stuff like that. And it's just like so cool, especially if we don't like, if we know that, like, you know, for example, like he doesn't want to have kids and I really do want to have kids. And so, like, you know, eventually I'm probably going to find another partner to have kids with and raise kids with. And he's just going to be like a really cool, like, uncle type figure to them. And I'm like, that's so rad, you know? It's really cool, like, to be able to kind of just like defy all the norms that are expected of like monogamous relationships. It's like, nah, we can do whatever we want. It's really cool. I love it.
That you know yourself so well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's great that it's out in the open and you can talk about it versus being secretive about it, which creates so much angst.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll like hear some like straight monogamous people talking about their relationships and like, you know, being all deceptive and like secretive and stuff. And I'm like, I cannot do that. I need to get everything out off of my chest all the time and be as honest as possible.
That's great. I really like what you're saying, Crimson, because you're just authentic. Mm-hmm. And that's a beautiful spirit. I knew when I saw you, when I met you, it's like there's something about you. And there's a realness, a deepness, you know, a soulfulness about you.
Ah, that's so sweet. Mm-hmm.
You love people, you want to help people, and you want to be free.
Aw, thank you so much.
Express yourself.
Yeah, you know, I've always been kind of questioning like social gender norms ever since I was a kid, you know, like I didn't shave my legs for a long time because I was like, well, if men don't have to do it, why should I have to do it? And like, I was like, I'm not going to wear makeup. If I wore makeup, you know, 500 years ago, people would think I look crazy. Like, yeah, I've always been questioning that. That's been its own thing, too, you know. Had some backlash from my family about that kind of stuff too. But I'm like, I've always been like, why is that the way it is? I don't think it should be like that.
Thank you for your voice, really, and speaking up and speaking out for people and wanting help. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
It's very invigorating to listen to you.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's so sweet.
You're a very magnetic personality. Oh. And I think anybody who runs into you is going to be a better person.
Ah! So nice. I'm like, that's literally my goal in life, is to help, you know, anybody I've come across, you know, like when I was figuring out all my college stuff way long ago and I was trying to figure out what I really want out of life, you know, I kind of decided I want to help people both in big ways and in small ways, you know, whether that's like working to end homelessness or like, you know, or buying somebody else's coffee when they're at the coffee shop, you know, little things like that.
Sorry that your parents, your mom and your stepfather are having such a hard time, because when they don't recognize you, they really are missing this. They're missing you.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't, because they don't want, I don't know, you don't fit into what they think you should be. So they're not going to even try to see you for who you are. It just seems like a very tragic thing.
Yeah.
How do you keep up? How do you keep positive without having that bring you down?
Yeah.
Because that's huge. You know?
Yeah. I appreciate the way you said that, because that's, I think that's totally, you know, what I've had to come to terms with. I think that, you know, like if they're not willing to accept certain parts of my life and my identity, like they're just going to have less access to my life. And it is really hard, but I definitely get that kind of support from a lot of different places in my life. You know, it might not necessarily be from my parents in the way that I want, but I have other family members who accept me wholeheartedly and have been there for me for so many different parts of my life. And I have a wonderful community here with Positive Images and, you know, at my school. And I just like, you know, there's a lot of queer joy and I feel really, really lucky to be such a part of that. And yeah, I feel sad that they're missing out on that, but sucks for them.
Queer joy. That's nice. I love that ring to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems like it should be a title of a book, Crimson.
I have a bumper sticker on my car that says queer joy is power. And I just think that's so true. You know, they're going to try to take away our joy. We just got to be even more joyful.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Good for you.
Well, that's a really good piece of wisdom from you. I'm wondering, it's getting to the close of our show, and we like to ask our guests for words of wisdom. That was a really nice little nugget. But do you have other words of wisdom you could leave our listeners with?
Yeah, I think I would say, you know, don't feel pressured to put yourself in any kind of box. I know there's a lot of different labels in the queer community, and that, you know, that might work great for some people. But if it doesn't, you know, whatever, you know, I've intentionally chosen labels that are kind of non-labels, like for my sexuality, I identify as queer, which is just like, I don't know, I'm gay. I don't need to put it in a box any more specific than that, you know? And then my gender is non-binary, which is just like not fully man, not fully woman. I don't know. Yeah, so, you know, don't feel pressured to fit into any kind of preconceived notion of who you should be or how you should act, you know?
This is beautiful. And this is why we do this show. For people like you, really, for you to share your story and for other people, for our audience, to our listeners, to get something from you, you know. So thank you so much, Crimson.
Yeah, thank you so much for hosting this show. Like, I love that y'all are spreading queer voices and queer joy and queer power. Mm-hmm. It's really great. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Well, we want to thank you so much for being on our show, like Diana just said, but it is time to say goodbye. And we want everyone to remember that just like Crimson, you too can be living proof that through being visible and vibrant, you too can make this world a better world. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we will be back next month. Until then,
good night. Hello, everyone. We were thinking about our conversation with Crimson, and we wanted to offer you a poem, a piece, because Crimson talked about purpose throughout their interview, and we thought it would be important for us to share a poem around purpose to encourage and to support you in finding your purpose. And if you have your purpose, to support and to solidify that purpose, because our lives matter. We all are important people. I hope you enjoy this. I will have my lovely wife accompanying me on the flute, Native American flute, which is very powerful. So just sit back and see if any of these words relate to you in your life and how they can support you. What does it mean to have purpose? To be born with it? To live by it? What does it mean to care, to love, to respect each other? To honor the land that holds us? To care for ourselves so deeply that we offer that same care to others? What does it mean to have purpose? How do our blind spots close our hearts? How do they block the path to truth, to connection, to meaning? So how do we find it? Or are we already living it? If we reach deep inside into the quiet center of the soul and listen, might we hear what we most Desire? And if we hear it, will we follow? Will we say yes without fear, without hesitation? Will we share the path with others? Let the question enter gently. What is my purpose? What would I do differently if I truly knew? And if you're still searching, maybe, just maybe, you're exactly where you're meant to be. You're already living your purpose. So breathe into that knowing. Breathe into this moment. This is your gift. Blessings.
Change, yeah. So do it today, yeah. 'Cause I can see your clear horizon.
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised right here in Sonoma County, with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com. You're listening to 104.9 KRCB-FM Roanoke Park and KRCG-FM Windsor, Sonoma County's NPR station. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. The Jazz Hot is next.